elections as Democrats clinch the majority in the Senate. It is most serious challenge Mitch McConnell has faced for his position after having led the Republican caucus for the past 15 years. I believe it's time for the Senate Republican Conference to be far more bold and resolute than we have been in the past, Rick Scott, who chaired the GOP Senate campaign arm during the 2022 cycle, said in a letter asking for members' votes on Tuesday, 15th of November. We must start saying that we are for, not just what we are against. I do not believe we can simply continue to say the Democrats are radical, which they are. Republican voters expect and deserve to know our plan to promote and advance conservative values. Mitch McConnell offered a different diagnosis of the Republican losses at his Tuesday news conference, attributing them to poor candidates and chaotic behavior within the Republican Party, which he said frightened independent voters and moderate voters. I don't own this job, Mitch McConnell said on Wednesday after the vote. Anybody who wants to run for it can feel free to do so. So I'm not in any way offended by having an opponent or having a few votes in opposition. I'm pretty proud of 37-10. Mitch McConnell is now on track to become the longest-serving Senate caucus leader in history. Rick Scott chaired the National Republican Senatorial Committee during the 2022 cycle, which ended in disappointment after the party failed to gain the one seat it needed to capture control of the U.S. Senate. Before Wednesday's leadership vote, Senator Braun of Indiana said he would back Rick Scott because he believes it's time for a change. I'm going to vote for something that's going to change the current dynamic that we're in, he said. The option is represented by Rick Scott currently. Rick Scott's challenge rankled some in the Republican caucus who attributed the 2022 defeats to his handling of the National Republican Senatorial Committee. Rick Scott must really love to lose, griped a Senate GOP aide. Rick Scott and Mitch McConnell have long feuded over strategy and vision for the Republican caucus. McConnell has long been the subject of ire from former President Donald Trump, who has campaigned aggressively to oust him as the Republican leader in the Senate. Tensions ran high on Wednesday as numerous Republicans had no interest in getting in the middle of the clash. Among them was Tim Scott of South Carolina, who told reporters asking about the leadership contest, "No habla inglés." In a lengthy closed-door GOP meeting on Tuesday, Susan Collins of Maine questioned management of the National Republican Senatorial Committee's finances. Susan Collins said, "I raised some questions on the amount of money that had been raised and allocated in this cycle versus other cycles and just questioned the differences," she said.
Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of The Subcontinent.
The Subcontinent.
Everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Subcontinent. As you know, on this program, we will address the most important issues in the South Asian region that affect the governments, organizations, communities, and most importantly, the people. And as always, we will dissect the issues and present you with different perspectives from experts and people. So, stay tuned.
In this episode of The Subcontinent,
We will discuss how Indian refiners have begun to diversify their supply, turning to Russia and Iran to meet the country's burgeoning energy needs. And we shall also examine Pakistan expressing its interest to seek energy supplies from Russia, following in the footsteps of India in defiance of Western sanctions.
In the wake of burgeoning demand for oil and gas, India is looking for all potential suppliers worldwide who could meet its energy needs. Russia and Iran are the two energy-rich countries New Delhi is wooing to keep its crude supply flowing. Following the recent OPEC oil quota cuts, India has ramped up its oil imports from Russia in defiance of U.S. pressure. Experts believe India's partnership with Moscow is likely to deepen further, with little support coming from the West.
Amid the unprecedented energy crisis gripping the world, triggered by the Ukraine war, as well as recent oil cuts by the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, Indian refiners have begun to diversify their supply, increasingly turning to Russia as well as the Islamic Republic of Iran to meet the country's energy needs.
Let's make no mistake.
In October, India announced its decision to speed up the diversification of oil imports, with Oil Minister Hardeep Puri saying that OPEC oil cuts would hurt importers like India.
Energy order has to change because of the severe crisis at the moment. And Russia has also need to export their oil, and they need a certain market where its oil can be and gas can be exported to. So India is taking advantage of it because of the Ukraine war and the heavy sanctions on Russia. Russia cannot export its oil and gas to Europe because they have stopped their previous payments. Russia is also looking for some market, and besides India being a huge population, a country of huge population, they're also looking forward to ensure their energy security.
To mitigate the potential risk, India has reportedly turned to Iran as one of its potential suppliers, apart from their common all-weather ally, Russia. The newly appointed Iranian ambassador to New Delhi, Iraj Elohi, expressed his country's willingness to provide low-cost crude to India to ensure the country's energy security. According to reliable sources, the two sides have already set the process rolling. Pertinently, Iran was one of the leading oil suppliers to India before the United States imposed sanctions on Iran's energy sector in 2018. The good news for India is that the U.S. government appears reluctant to sanction India's oil imports from either Russia or Iran amid the global energy crisis. On the other hand, Iran has significantly ramped up its crude exports, defying sanctions.
Our strategic collaboration that would play a significant role. But Iran has to be very careful, like when coming up in like more bilateral, more friendly relations, more friendly bilateral relations with other countries, because there are some conflict of interest as well. But after Chabahar collaboration, I believe Iran is also looking for some consumer markets, because it has to survive economically and to improve its trade links. And so far, if they are also find some market in India for their oil and other goods, that is really good for Iran.
More worrying for the West is India's growing energy partnership with Russia, which has in recent months become one of New Delhi's top oil suppliers, especially after the European countries turned away from Moscow over its military operation in Ukraine. The low-cost crude offered by Russia seems too irresistible for India. In October, India's oil imports from Russia continued to surge, a clear indication that New Delhi has prioritized its energy security in the face of Western pressure.
India's import of Russian oil continued to mount in October, making Russia the biggest supplier to the energy-dependent South Asian country. According to energy cargo tractor Vortexa, Moscow supplied 935,556 barrels of crude oil per day to India in October. Russia now makes up for 22% of India's total crude imports, ahead of Iraq's 20.5% and Saudi Arabia's 16%. Before the war broke out in Ukraine in February, Russia supplied only 36,255 barrels per day of crude oil to India, whereas Iraq dispatched 1.05 million and Saudi Arabia 952,625 barrels of crude oil per day.
So that they cut even deeper into the Russian economy.
It implies that Western sanctions on Russia in the wake of the Ukraine war have backfired, especially in India's case. The attempts to choke Russian energy supplies have failed, with Moscow diverting its exports to Asian countries, in particular India and China. India depends on imports to meet 85% of its petroleum needs.
If there are certain restrictions from the U.S. or EU, or Islamabad cannot bypass any kind of sanctions, not even dare to at the moment when we are facing the high inflation and disasters. We need international financial institutions. They are mostly controlled by the U.S. and the European countries. They are against Russia, and they have imposed strict restrictions. We cannot bypass, though we are considering certain offers from Russia, including import of oil and gas and wheat as well. And we are Islamabad was having certain staff level talks about it, but in the near future, I think I have really doubts that Pakistan would be able to bypass certain restrictions. Until we have U.S. not, we will not be able to.
Russia's offer of heavily discounted crude was too hard to resist for India, prompting the Narendra Modi government to deepen ties with the oil giant. Senior Indian government officials have publicly declared in recent weeks that New Delhi is going to take oil from wherever it comes, irrespective of geopolitical shifts.
With India and China ramping up their oil imports from Russia in recent months, Pakistan has also expressed its interest to seek energy supplies from Moscow. Pakistan's ability to import oil from Russia has been severely impeded by the threat of U.S. sanctions. A leading Pakistani newspaper recently cited a senior U.S. State Department official as saying that Washington does not currently have sanctions in place against Russian energy exports to other countries, which has rekindled hope in Islamabad about oil imports from Moscow.
During the previous government in Islamabad, a third-party supplier had reportedly offered Pakistan's leading oil refinery an opportunity to import discounted crude from Russia, but the plan failed to materialize due to U.S. sanctions on Moscow. The war in Ukraine prompted the U.S. and its European allies to choke even payments to third-party suppliers of oil. But things are changing now. Pakistan's Dawn newspaper recently cited an unnamed U.S. State Department official as saying that Washington does not have sanctions in place against Russian energy supplies. The official said the decision to ban Russian oil exports has been left to the individual countries.
U.S. and the NATO countries and the European Union have very strict restrictions and sanctions on any kind of trade and bilateral relationship with Russia. But if they are lenient to Pakistan at the moment when we are disaster hit, it is good that we can have. But unfortunately, that is being reflected. But unfortunately, that is not the true picture. Pakistani authorities believe that they cannot move ahead with Russia on the agriculture, agriculture trade or import of wheat or import of crude oil, because we are also have not much technology to refine it.
It came after Pakistan's finance minister, Ishaq Dar, last month said the country is actively considering the purchase of discounted Russian oil, trying to allay concerns that the country might need to reschedule its $10 billion U.S. dollar debt owed to the deferred payment. Russia's entry into the Pakistani market is likely to break the monopoly of Saudi Arabia there.
Top Indian government officials have repeatedly asserted in recent months that the country won't fall for the Western war propaganda and will continue to import oil from Russia to ensure its energy security. After Indian Oil Minister Hardeep Puri's remark in Washington last month, Foreign Minister S. Jaishankar reaffirmed New Delhi's clear stance during his visit to Moscow last week, declaring that New Delhi will continue to purchase oil from Moscow as global energy order moves from the West to the East.
The key agenda of Indian Foreign Minister S. Jaishankar's recent visit to Moscow was to secure Russian energy supplies amid the global energy meltdown. In his meeting with Russian counterpart Sergei Lavrov, Jaishankar made it clear that his country will not succumb to Western pressure and will continue to purchase oil from Russia. Shortly after that, the U.S. State Department took a step back, noting that India's oil imports from Russia do not run afoul of sanctions on Moscow. The two sides also agreed on setting the criteria and principles for BRICS expansion, as key countries from the Global South have expressed interest in joining the grouping.
UN failure to have bilateral and multilateral relations in the regions. Several regional forums are being strengthened by them. For example, we have seen SCO expanding and being strengthened. And SICA was also from an intergovernmental organization to it has been expanded to certain recognized by the governments. What should I say? A regional forum of the governments to interact on. And they have also started expansion of. I certainly BRICS, if extended, expanded to other countries, people would like to be part of it. And it has a certain significance as well, not in the geopolitical context, but also geoeconomic context as well. And I believe in the near future, these regional forums will be playing more significant role in controlling the unilateral decisions.
It is worth noting that the global energy order has got divided into two blocks, and intra-BRICS trade has gained a strategic role in oil geopolitics. Russian crude oil exports sanctioned by the West have been redirected to India and China, as well as other smaller clients. Amid the global energy crisis and rising prices, the move has tripled Russia's account surplus in the first quarter over the same period last year and helped ruble become the world's best performing currency this year. With the BRICS grouping set to expand, experts believe that the era of dollar dominance is also coming to an end.
You're listening to The Subcontinent, broadcast by IRIB English Radio. This weekly program reviews ongoing developments in India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. Listen to The Subcontinent every Monday here on IRIB English Radio.
Now, to have more insight, we are joined by Mr. Zamir Ahmed Awan from Islamabad. He's a former diplomat and international affairs expert. First of all, welcome to the program, Mr. Awan. Now, India's oil imports from Russia continue to surge well ahead of Iraq and Saudi Arabia now. Now, does this point to changing global energy order and waning U.S. influence?
Let me start with the Indian import of Russian oil. Of course, first of all, I'm against the sanction on Russia. The unilateral sanction on any country are not permissible according to the UN Charter. It should have gone to the Security Council, built on consensus. The Security Council is eligible to put sanction on any country. United States unilateral or one-sided sanction, we think is not appropriate way. However, whatever US has put the sanctions on Russia, India is not supposed to buy oil from Russia. And if India still keep on buying oil from Russia, India should be punished. India should be boycotted. But on the other hand, US is a close ally with the India and cannot afford to offend India. So they keep their eyes closed and they let India to buy the cheaper oil. It is very unfortunate and unjustified that Pakistan is prohibited to import oil from Russia while India has been allowed. This is not justice, this is open discrimination. And we urge the UN and other international community to keep justice and without discrimination.
Mr. Awan, amid the Ukraine war and the recent oil cuts by OPEC, Indian refiners have begun to diversify their supply. So what makes Russia the ideal destination for Indian refiners, apart from discounted crude?
Ukraine war is definitely has a huge geopolitical impact. It has created a shortage of supply of food and energy. Definitely, it will change the global energy order. And India, being a big country with a population of 1.3 billion, they have changed their policies and they are going to opt the new avenues of economy, that is the oil base. They will import the crude oil and process in India. They are opportunists and they are trying to make the best use of this crisis in their own favor.
Mr. Awan, Iranian ambassador to New Delhi has recently expressed his country's willingness to resume oil supplies to India, and reports suggest that the two sides are in talks. So how significant is it for their bilateral ties?
First of all, I will re-emphasize that sanctions on Iran are illegitimate. We don't accept this unilateral sanction on Iran. We urge all the international community to remove the sanction on Iran. Regarding the Iranian ambassador in New Delhi, I have not seen this news, but I believe that Iran should export oil to all the countries of the world. I believe Pakistan, being the first neighbor country, we deserve to have more interaction and Iranian oil and gas to Pakistan. Definitely, we have no objection. If India is wanted to buy some oil or gas or energy or trade with Iran, we are more than happy. But of course, Pakistan, being the first neighbor, have the right to have much more share of the trade with Iran. These sanctions should not be hindrance between the trade between Iran and Pakistan. And Pakistan is the severe shortage of energy. We are shortage of gas, we are shortage of fuel, and Iran has a plenty. And we are the neighbors. We should cooperate in this way. And we should ignore or bypass these international sanctions.
Sir, a Pakistani newspaper recently quoted a U.S. State Department official as saying that they currently don't have sanctions in place against Russian energy exports. So does this suggest that Americans have conceded defeat?
It is very complex question. American, of course, they have faced huge challenges, but they don't accept their defeat. they understand they cannot win this war, but still they keep on going. For example, in Afghanistan, just after a couple of years of the war, in early 2000, they felt that they cannot win against the local people, the Taliban or the Afghan people. But still, they kept on, they lingered on for the 2 decades, for 20 years. In the same way, in Vietnam, then they have come to know, they have realized that they will never win, but still they kept for a long time. In Ukraine and on other issues, I believe it is a matter of losing face. So Americans understand they will never win, but they might not accept publicly.
Mr. Wan, with India and China ramping up their oil imports from Russia, Pakistan says it's also considering it. Now, do you think the plan will materialize and Islamabad will be able to bypass the U.S. sanctions?
In fact, initially, we were trying to buy oil and gas from Russia and also the wheat and the food. But definitely, due to the American pressure, it was not materialized. But I think with the passage of time, Pakistan can overcome these challenges and will definitely, it is in our economic interest if we buy from Russia fuel and our basic needs of fuel from the Russia on a much cheaper price, almost 30% less than the international market. This is the ultimate goal. Let's see how we overcome the American pressures.
Sir, what about the BRICS? The expansion of BRICS is on the cards with almost a dozen countries from the global south showing interest in joining the grouping. So how significant is it for oil geopolitics and the global energy order?
In fact, the existing alliances are not satisfactory. Many countries are suffering, are the victim of the existing alliances. That's why the new alliances are emerging rapidly. One of them is the BRICS, the other important one, the SCO, and some other alliances are also emerging very rapidly. I think that this is because the United Nations is unable to solve most of the disputes and differences and the problems and the issues. That's why the people of the world are thinking to emerge new alliances to in their own protection. They wanted to, they are fear that some stronger countries will damage them or destroy them or invade them or coerce them. That's why they are seeking refuge in small alliances around the world in their own region. BRICS is, of course, is a very important group, is a very big alliance. It is among 5 big countries. That is Russia, China, India, South Africa, and there are 5 countries altogether. And they are trying to expand the BRICS scope. I believe many countries are interested to join the BRICS. Iran is one of them. Pakistan is also willing. And some other countries are also willing to join the BRICS. Once the BRICS has widened its scope, it will be more effective, and especially the energy countries, if they join hands, definitely it will change the energy order globally.
There you have it, Mr. Awan, a former diplomat and international affairs expert from Islamabad. Thank you for being on the program, Mr. Awan. Now, let's see how people have reacted on social media.
Matt Murdoch on Twitter. Once again, India treated USA like a clown. Russia becomes biggest oil supplier to Bharat. Russia defeated Iraq and Saudi in oil supplying to India. Sanctions. Peter Elias said, Russia becomes India's top oil supplier in October. Francesco Sassi posted, Russia seems winning the oil price cap war with the West. Russia has surpassed Iraq and Saudi Arabia as India's largest supplier of oil, as Asia's third largest economy cashes in on steep price discounts caused by sanctions against Moscow. Subhagia R. Mohanty tweeted, India is the country that most benefited from the Russia versus Ukraine war. Let's see how. Due to sanctions, Russia has been offering steep discounts on crude, which led India to increase its purchase of Russian oil. Russia became India's second largest crude supplier in September 2022.
And that was our episode about the failure of Western sanctions in preventing India as well as Pakistan from buying Russian oil. We shall meet again next week. So till then, take great care.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
In the limelight.
Since Russia started its special operation in Ukraine in order to prevent NATO's eastward expansion, the United States and European countries have sent huge amounts of weapons and ammunition to Ukraine. Russia, which has announced that one of its goals of this operation is to save the people of eastern Ukraine from repressions of the Western-oriented Ukrainian regime, has always condemned the West's military aid and says this action will only prolong the war. We have taken a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. Germany's Der Spiegel has more for us. Germany's Defense Minister Alexei Reznikov confirmed the first unit of the country's cutting-edge Iris-T air defense system has arrived in Ukraine. Reznikov wrote on Twitter on Wednesday, 12th of October, "A new era of air defense has begun in Ukraine. Iris-Ts from Germany are already here." The German defense minister noted that Kiev needs more weapons of this kind, arguing that protecting the sky over Ukraine against attacks by Russia is a moral imperative. Several hours later, Germany's defense ministry posted a tweet of its own, stressing that Berlin had kept its word and announced that the first Iris-T SLM air defense system has arrived in Ukraine. In a follow-up message, ministry officials quoted their boss, Christine Lambrecht, as hailing the shipment as very important support to Ukraine in its fight against missile shelling. The German Chancellor Olaf Scholz made the original pledge back in June, with a shipment initially slated for November. A total of four units made up of command vehicle, a radar vehicle, and a truck-mounted launcher are scheduled to arrive in Ukraine sometime in 2023. According to media reports, Kiev requested at least a dozen of these ultra-modern air defense systems and offered to purchase them directly from the manufacturer, Diehl Defense of Germany. Meanwhile, Germany's own military has not received a single unit of the ground-based Iris-T system variant as of yet. This underlines concerns voiced by some German politicians and media outlets that Berlin is seriously depleting its own weapons stockpiles by supplying the hardware to Kiev. Meanwhile, Ukraine had until recently consistently lambasted Germany over its perceived unwillingness to provide heavy weaponry to Kiev. According to former Ukrainian ambassador to Germany, Andrei Melnik, with an effective range believed to be up to 40 kilometers, the air defense system is rather expensive. Speaking to Wirtschaftswoche magazine back in June, the diplomat estimated that one such unit could cost about 140 million euros. That is, $135.4 million. French broadcaster Antenne 2 of France 2 says, French President Emmanuel Macron stated Paris will send air defense systems, radars, missiles and weapons to Ukraine in the coming weeks to defend against missile and drone attacks. Emmanuel Macron, whose comments come after Ukraine experienced a wave of Russian missile attacks, claimed on Wednesday, 12th of October, the French supplies would specifically help defeat these kinds of threats. He added that France would deliver the hardware and the necessary training to Ukraine. Ukraine has specifically requested the weapons as a priority. The French president noted that this decision followed an unprecedented phase of bombings that struck Ukrainian cities and infrastructure. Without going into detail, Emmanuel Macron said France was providing military intelligence to Ukraine. He claimed Russia is profoundly destabilized in its capacity to regenerate its arms, its production and industry. Emmanuel Macron also declared, "We are in a hybrid war," he said. "We're not just using weapons on the ground, but using weapons of information," claiming that Russia was using a wide variety of approaches to wage the conflict, including propaganda channels, paying for influence, including on social media sites, weaponizing migration, blackmail and hunger. Questioned on nuclear risks in Ukraine, the French President Emmanuel Macron confirmed that France's nuclear doctrine would not automatically commit to a retaliatory strike if Russia used nuclear weapons in Ukraine. The French President also refused to brand Russia a terrorist state, saying that such labels have little consequences. Macron claimed, "There's one state that's declared war, and that's more than enough." Sky News television channel has more about the same story. Britain's Defence Secretary Ben Wallace stated London will supply Kiev with advanced air defence missiles capable of shooting down cruise projectiles. Ben Wallace also announced a new aid ahead of a two-day NATO meeting in Brussels on Wednesday, 12th of October. The missile authorised for shipment to Ukraine is called the Advanced Medium-Range Air-to-Air Missiles, or AMRAAM. Furthermore, Britain will also be providing Ukraine with hundreds of drones to support its intelligence services and 18 howitzer artillery guns, in addition to 64 already delivered. British Defence Secretary Ben Wallace said these weapons will help Ukraine defend its skies from attacks and strengthen their overall missile defence alongside the US NASAMS, or National Advanced Surface-to-Air Missile System. The United Kingdom has previously supplied Kiev with various weapons, including the Endlor anti-tank missile launcher. Ukraine's key Western allies gathered in Brussels, Belgium, in order to discuss how to boost support for Ukraine and replenish allies' depleted military stockpiles. They pledged new air defences and more aid on the sidelines of the meeting. The pledges from Paris and London followed similar announcements from United States and Germany recently. Canada also announced it would provide over $47 million Canadian dollars in new military aid to Ukraine, with a package including artillery rounds, satellite communications equipment, winter clothing, and drone cameras. Furthermore, the French Defense Minister, Sébastien Lecornu, told Le Parisien newspaper on Saturday, 15th of October, President Emmanuel Macron has backed a proposal to train a large number of Ukrainian soldiers in France. He said the president has approved a training plan that will allow up to 2,000 Ukrainian soldiers to be welcomed in France. Sébastien Lecornu added, "They will be assigned to our units for several weeks," adding that military training for the use of Caesar howitzers had previously been offered to Ukrainian soldiers. Lecornu said, but now it's a change of scale.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
When former U.S. President Donald Trump unilaterally pulled out of the Iran deal, known as the JCPOA, he also kickstarted his maximum pressure campaign. It essentially entailed exerting as much pressure on Iran through cutting it off from world trade and the global political sphere as much as possible through U.S.'s influence on world bodies, such as the United Nations and the European Union. In the archive of U.S. Department of State, you can see that the foundation of the UN was even based on consolidating U.S. power. It reads, "He, President Roosevelt, felt that this time the United States needed to play a leading role both in the creation of the organization and in the organization itself. This time refers to the post-World War II era." One odd form of influence that the U.S. has in the UN, for example, is by having essentially three extra votes through an agreement called the Compact of Free Association that makes Micronesia, Marshall Islands, and Palau, all of whom have permanent seats at the UN, client states that would always vote in favor of U.S. interests. Through this pull, the U.S. has managed to get these world bodies to adopt more sanctions against Iran. Even the IAEA, which has had Iran's full cooperation and transparency over the years, is taking anti-Iran stances as of recently. The U.S. has sanctioned 13 more companies this week that weren't even in Iran. According to U.S. Office of Foreign Assets Control, the aforementioned companies are accused of, quote, facilitating the sale of hundreds of millions of dollars worth of Iranian petrochemicals and petroleum products to buyers in East Asia, and that they were only fronts. Since June, the U.S. has adopted five rounds of designations targeting Iran's petrochemical industry alone. The EU and the UK have also recently added to their sanctions list by putting the names of dozens of individuals and entities on it. A few days ago, they targeted 29 individuals and three entities with asset freezes and travel bans, and in October, when the first batch of new sanctions were introduced, it was 15 individuals and institutions added to the list. In a statement by Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani, he said that Europe's addiction to sanctions has deprived European parties of rationality and tactfulness, tightening the noose on its foreign relations. He further added, "Iran, relying on its national power and making use of its unique experiences in actively dealing with imposed challenges, will take effective countermeasures against such fruitless and unconstructive measures as it did before by upholding its honor and protecting its national interest." Looking at the list of the 30 sanctions regimes that the UN has adopted since 1966, you will almost exclusively see poor African countries as well as Middle Eastern countries, with very few exceptions. You will find no country in the Western Bloc. The only European country on the list is former Yugoslavia, which wasn't even considered as the West when it wasn't former Yugoslavia. This means that there has been no sin big enough on the West's record to warrant any sanctions against it. Neither the invasion of Iraq and Afghanistan by US and NATO, nor the Saudi coalition's war in Yemen, nor the unwavering support of the US for Israel's decades of violating Palestinians' rights, or the Libyan coup staged by the West. And certainly not funding Persian-speaking channels to call for riots and violence in the streets of Iran, as well as platforming numerous separatist groups and organizations. The excuses found during the past weeks to exert even more pressure on Iran has been growing. from U.S. Navy's claims that Iran was trying to smuggle 70 tons of missile fuel to Yemen, or an attack on an Israeli billionaire's oil tanker off the coast of Oman, both of which Iran rejects having a part in. The so-called world body's conduct seems to have only benefited a unipolar Western agenda, an agenda increasingly questioned and increasingly under threat. In order to keep the crumbling American hegemony, though, the U.S. and its allies must shut down opposition through any means necessary, even if it means championing human rights and then calling for immunity for Mohammed bin Salman following revelations of his direct involvement in the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. Even if U.S. President formerly vowed to make Saudi Arabia pay for the crime.
With respect to the murder of Khashoggi, I raised it at the top of the meeting, making it clear what I thought of it at the time and what I think of it now. And it was exactly, I was straightforward and direct in discussing it. I made my view crystal clear. I said very straightforwardly, for an American president to be silent on an issue of human rights, is this consistent with, inconsistent with who we are and who I am? I'll always stand up for our values. We are going to hold them accountable for human rights abuses.
Iran is an obstacle in the way of U.S. hegemony and domination in the region. The failed maximum pressure campaign is America's attempt at clutching to its imperialist adventures. How long will it be able to keep up the act, however, is the question.
For weeks, Iran has witnessed unrest and riots in its different cities. The unrest started after a young woman named Mahsa Amini fainted in police custody and later died in hospital. The protests were initially peaceful, but violent elements supported by Western spy agencies hijacked the protests and turned into violent riots. The unrest has provided a fertile ground for Western governments and spy agencies to launch a media warfare on Iran and create anti-Iran fake news. A recent notorious case in point is the recent tweet by Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. In the controversial tweet, the Canadian Premier had claimed that Iran has sentenced 15,000 protesters to death. The false claim, which has been part of the media campaign against Iran, has been circulating on social media in recent days. The inaccurate tweet was live on Trudeau's official Twitter account for almost 12 hours before it was deleted. Several Western celebrities and news outlets, including the Newsweek, also shared the erroneous information. This is not the only case of false news propagated against Iran. When the protests first started in Iran, Western-backed propaganda outlets claimed that Mahsa Amini was beaten to death by Iranian police forces. Following an elaborate investigation, that claim also proved to be false. It's now become a common practice for these propaganda machines to publish unverified footages on protests in Iran. Back in September 2022, U.S. media outlets ran a controversial report. The report was widely discussed and celebrated in anti-Iran outlets. But it turned out to be a fake report after Ayatollah Khamenei publicly attended a military ceremony in Tehran in October. The false report was propagated by Western outlets as Iran was battling the Western-backed riots. Social media platforms have also turned into a battleground of narratives against Iran. Analysis shows those tweeting the hashtags associated with the unrest showed a striking number of new accounts created since the protests started.
In August 2011, when there were riots in London because someone was shot and killed by the police, a number of people were killed. I don't recall the exact number. But big tech, Facebook, back then BlackBerry, and Twitter cooperated with the British government. In the case of Iran, big tech is used as a weapon against Iranians. So Iranian voices don't come out. Iranians lose their, if they are opposed to the Western narrative, they get sanctioned. All of the Iranian media is sanctioned. Many individuals have lost their accounts. I have lost my Facebook and Instagram accounts. So these Western big tech companies they cooperate with Western governments, even though in the riots in London, people were killed, and they arrested people and put them in jail for inciting riots. But in Iran, these same media outlets make threats, they support, they help people make Molotov cocktails, and they help mobilize the rioters.
The online anti-Iran campaign is fed by fake accounts used by members of the anti-Iran Mujahideen-e-Khalq organization terrorist cult who are stationed in Albania and so-called journalists employed by the Saudi-funded London-based Iran International TV, which is now on Tehran's terror blacklist. The television channel has openly been promoting monarchists, the highly notorious MKO terror group, and most significantly, separatist terrorists. A particular case in point is a project by Western media outlets to accuse the government of killing its own citizens. They have produced a long list of citizens which they claim have been killed by security forces.
Iran has witnessed another deadly terrorist attack. The latest deadly incident happened in the city of Izeh in Iran's southwestern province of Khuzestan. Unidentified gunmen opened fire on civilians and security forces, killing several people, including a child and an elderly woman. The terror attack also left a number of people injured. No group has yet claimed responsibility for the assault. President Ebrahim Raisi has condoled with the families of the victims, ordering security officials to identify and bring to justice all terrorists behind the attack. The senior judicial official says three people who were behind the brutal attack were arrested. The special operation is going on to identify and to bring to justice other people involved in the attack in the city of Izeh. Separately, a religious seminary school in the Izeh city was set ablaze by a group of rioters. No one was injured in that incident. Separately, three people were killed and eight security forces injured during riots in Semirom in the central Iranian province of Isfahan. Two security forces also killed and two others wounded in the city of Malikshahr in Isfahan province. Last month, a terrorist attack happened in the city of Shiraz. On October 26th, a terrorist attacked the popular Shia shrine of Shah Cheragh in Iran's southwestern province of Fars, killing over a dozen people. That attack was claimed by the Daesh terrorist group. The attacks come amid ongoing foreign-backed riots that have hit various Iranian provinces after a 22-year-old Kurdish woman named Mahsa Amini died in the hospital despite intensive medical care and resuscitation efforts. The rioters have been going on a rampage across the country, attacking security officers, resorting to vandalism against public property, and desecrating religious sanctities. Iran says the attacks are part of a larger plot to destabilize the country. Foreign Minister Amir Abdullahian says security services, the Israeli regime, and certain Western politicians are conspiring to trigger a civil war in Iran to destroy and to disintegrate the country. He warned them that Iran is not Libya or Sudan. He also noted that the enemies are targeting Iran's territorial integrity and identity, saying that Iran will not allow anyone to jeopardize national security. The terrorist attack comes amid Western attempts to stoke unrest in Iran and to create more economic hardships for the Iranian people. Late last month, Iran's main intelligence bodies reported that the U.S., backed by the U.K., Saudi Arabia, Israel, and other allies, are devising a multidimensional plot for instigating riots in the Islamic Republic and directing the wave of violence.
We are telling our enemies, the U.S., Britain, the Saudis, these are the ones that, through their destructive media outlets, they are targeting our revolution. We are warning them that we will break you, we will crush you, you will not find any way into this territory.
Western countries expressed their open support for rioters and acts that Tehran described as inciting violence and hatred. The European Union and some Western countries have imposed sanctions on Iran over its approach toward the recent riots. Recently, the former U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton confirmed that subversive groups in Iran, which he characterized as the opposition, are being armed with weapons imported from Iraq's Kurdistan.
You
United States should take history as a mirror and let it guide the future. That's what the Chinese President Xi Jinping told his American counterpart Joe Biden on the sidelines of the Group of 20 summit in Bali, Indonesia.
As always, I'm ready to have a candid and in-depth exchange of views with Mr. President on issues of strategic importance in China-US relations and major global and regional issues at our meeting today. I also look forward to working with you to bring China-US relations back to the track of healthy and stable development.
We share responsibility, in my view, to show that China and the United States can manage our differences, prevent competition from becoming anything ever near conflict, and to find ways to work together on urgent global issues that require our mutual cooperation.
The two held their first ever in-person meeting as relations between Washington and Beijing are at their lowest in decades, marred by disagreements over a host of issues from Taiwan to trade. During the landmark three-hour meeting, the Chinese president warned his U.S. counterpart not to cross Beijing's red line over Taiwan. According to the Chinese state media, Xi stressed that Taiwan is the bedrock of the political foundation of bilateral relations. Biden, for his part, said the U.S. wants to manage differences with China to prevent competition from becoming conflict. Biden said he sought to assure Xi that U.S. policy on Taiwan has not changed, seeking to lower tensions over the self-ruled island.
And I do not think there's any imminent attempt on the part of China to invade Taiwan. And I made it clear that our policy on Taiwan has not changed at all. It's the same exact position we've had. I made it clear that we want to see cross-strait issues peacefully resolved.
On North Korea, Biden told Xi that Beijing has an obligation to attempt to talk Pyongyang out of conducting a seventh nuclear test. U.S.-China relations have been strained in recent years by growing tensions over issues ranging from Taiwan to the South China Sea, trade practices, and U.S. restrictions on Chinese technology. Regarding Taiwan, Beijing says it's a matter for the Chinese and China's internal affair. Anyone that seeks to split Taiwan from China will be violating the fundamental interests of the Chinese nation. Tensions over the self-ruled island have intensified following a provocative visit there in August by the U.S. House of Representatives Speaker Nancy Pelosi. The move prompted large-scale Chinese military drills around the island territory, as well as a declaration by the U.S. President Joe Biden to defend Taiwan. Beijing has time and again slammed U.S. provocations, including encouraging and supporting pro-separatist independence forces on the island, saying that Washington has no right to interfere in how to resolve the Taiwan issue. Also, Biden dropped the hammer on China's semiconductor industry by fully implementing a slew of tough controls on the export of American chip technology to China. It would also undermine China's ability to import, manufacture, and export the semiconductors that run the world. The goal was to slow down and prevent Chinese military and technological advances. Washington also takes sides with Beijing's rivals in a maritime dispute in the South China Sea by routinely sending warships and warplanes to the waters to assert what it calls its right to freedom of navigation. China has repeatedly called on Washington to stop the provocative actions, which undermine peace and stability in the strategic waters. Last month, the White House and the Pentagon declared Beijing as Washington's most serious strategic competitor, in reports outlining U.S. defense and foreign policy strategies. Therefore, despite Biden's meeting with Xi, can the two manage their differences to prevent conflict, or is it inevitable that the two are on the collision course?
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.